The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
Now, as you heard on News Talk Breakfast and on the news, a study into the use of pornography among young Irish adults has found that 2/3 of young men use online pornography. For young women, that figure is closer to 1 in 10, 13%, representing a hugely significant gender gap. The report also examined outside influences like socioeconomic backgrounds, and it looked into links with other behavioural issues like aggression. Joining me now to discuss the detail of the report is one of its authors, Professor Emer Smith, Research Professor at the ESRI. Emer, good morning.
Good morning, Anton.
Can we start with that dichotomy in the genders, the 13% among young women, 64% among young men? To what do you attribute that?
It's really an international pattern. Studies elsewhere find a similar gender gap. It's hard to explain, but it's fairly constant across countries.
And when we say young men, young women, what age groups are we talking?
These were 20 when they were surveyed.
And the survey results, how are they surveyed? Is it by interview? Is it anonymised?
They completed an interview, but for the more sensitive questions, they were given a laptop by the interviewer and they completed that privately. So we think they're less likely to be giving answers that would please the interviewer or be seen as more socially acceptable. So we think they would be more honest in that context.
Now, I said that you had looked into other behavioural attitudes linked to those. Can you walk us through some of the findings in respect of that?
Yes. Very concerningly, we found that users of pornography were significantly less likely to use condoms regularly. And that was quite a large gap for young men. Those who used porn were half as likely to use condoms. And we think that's because they're modelling behaviour from porn itself, which is typically depicting condomless sex. But there are also implications for well-being. We saw, as you said earlier, that men who use pornography have poorer well-being, so they're less satisfied with their lives. They have a poorer view of themselves and they're more likely to report depressive symptoms.
Do you see the same pattern? I mean, albeit your catchment number are smaller, but do you see the same pattern among women?
Not to the same extent, but we do find for both women and men, those who use porn have higher levels of aggression and they're more likely to cope with stress by using more negative coping strategies like drinking or taking to the bed. So we think that porn is emerging as a kind of negative coping strategy, at least in part. So rather than talk to someone or do something that's going to make you feel better, like take exercise, they're kind of avoiding dealing with the stressor. And porn kind of fits into that category.
You also found interesting socioeconomic patterns.
Yes, we find that men from more advantaged backgrounds are more likely to use pornography, but there's no such difference for the young women. We're not really clear why that happens, but it may be that they're more internet savvy, that they have more privacy at home and they're therefore more likely to be exposed to internet porn.
Do you have any sense how they compare to their older peers? Are they more or less likely to use pornography?
We actually don't know. There's really poor data on this kind of behaviour in Ireland. So this is the first study that can look comprehensively. But we are following this group are being followed up by the Central Statistics Office. So they've just been interviewed at the age of 25. So we'll know more then and then could hopefully follow them into adult life.
To what extent are you able to separate cause and effect?
It's difficult. For the behaviour, though, we do know what they were like at 17. We know about their well-being at 17. We know about their sexual behaviour at 17. So we can kind of partial that out. We can't be absolutely clear. So it is likely to be in both directions. So, for example, those who are less satisfied with their lives may be seeking out porn as a kind of refuge, and that in turn may affect their satisfaction. We can't be completely clear, but the findings are quite stark and they hold even if we take account of what they were like when they were 17.
When you say that they are quite stark, the correlation between pornography use and dissatisfaction with life?
Yeah. There's quite a clear gap there, yeah.
Because what then about things like condom use? Because again, that's one where you said that it could be modelling based on what they are seeing.
Yes.
In the pornography.
Yeah.
Presumably we could also reverse that and say that those who are sexually on the edges of risk taking are more likely to look at porn. Or do we know which one is causing the other?
Again, that is possible, but international research has also found that those who use porn regularly are less likely to use condoms. So we do think it's that kind of what's called in the literature is sexual script, so that young people are using it as a kind of modelling of sexual behaviour in the absence of other information. And we also find that those who are more reliant on the internet or their friends for information about sex rather than talking to their parents are more likely to use porn. So it's that idea of kind of relying on, you know, what can be misinformation from friends or from the internet rather than having those discussions with their parents.
When you look at the numbers, they seem very high at first glance. So you have about 2/3 of men who are 20 years of age using pornography. You have about 1 in 10 women who are 20 years of age or were at the time of being surveyed using pornography. Does it seem low by comparison to what one might have expected? If you look at, I'm just looking at a list of the top websites in Ireland at present, and one of the main pornographic sites is more popular than Amazon, than the BBC, than Independent.ie, than The Guardian, than The Irish Times, than Dundeal. That would suggest that more than 2/3 of men and more than 1 in 10 women are looking at it.
Possibly, but we don't know. I presumably some of those figures count repeat viewing. As I said, there's very little information on this on the adult population. These are young people who are 20 years of age. They're kind of have moved out of school. Most of them were in further and higher education. They had busy lives in many other respects. So I'm not sure what we would have expected in terms of porn use. We had very minimal information. We just knew whether they were using the internet for pornography. We'd like to be able to dig deeper in future research to look at how regularly they use porn. And it would be really good to know what kinds of porn in terms of, you know, issues around sexual aggression, around consent and so on.
Stay with us, if you would, Emer, because we're joined by Dr. Richard Hogan, who is psychotherapist and author. And to some extent, we're entering into the realms of anecdotage with the kind of expectations in relation to what we might have thought would be normal porn use. Are you surprised in that context, Richard, by these numbers?
I'm not surprised. As you said there, I suppose I think they're probably lower than what they really are. It's a great study and I commend Emer. It's fantastic to see it, to come out there, get some literature in this, because as Emer said, it's not really spoken about. It's in the shadows. We're Irish. We don't like to talk about sex, right? And we certainly don't want to talk about our pornography usage. But, you know, in my clinic, I see it. I see the damage of this stuff every day. I work with children who've consumed this. I work with adults who've consumed this. I work with families who've been torn apart by this, to be honest. And I think it's something that we need more research on. We need more literature on it so that we can really have an open conversation about it, because it is causing massive problems in relationships.
Can you expand on the word causing, Richard? Because that question about what is cause and what is effect, if you look at this, when you see problem pornography consumption, yeah, how does it manifest?
Right. So this is what I would see a lot, Anton, as a kind of a general kind of case study. Couples coming in, not having probably a dip or a nadir in their intimacy. And then the real understanding of what's causing that dip is pornography. And when I sit there and talk with generally the male in the couple, they would say about very low life satisfaction. They would say they got into pornography to kind of like maybe satiate that low life satisfaction. And then having consumed these images, sought out some of the behaviors that they had consumed to mimic some of the behaviors that they had watched. And so intimacy had completely eroded in the couple. And the generally the male, as I said, has gone down a very dark, lonely road here, absolutely isolated and kind of like stuck in this behavior. But you see, it's kind of like a positive feedback loop as well. There's lots of biological stuff going on here. Dopamine hit. You know, you're looking for the more extreme image you consume, the more the reward center fires. And so the deeper you go, this thing can take you down a very, very dark rabbit hole, Anton.
But that does then link to what Emer was saying about potential modelling in some of the behaviours, if we look at condom use, that kind of thing, if that is what you are seeing, or if particularly risky sexual behaviour is what you are saying, that then becomes normalised within the couple.
Yes, it does. And where the problem really is that when you see this on, performed in the performative aspect of, say, pornography, the riskier the behavior you see, the more extreme the behavior you see, the more the reward center in the brain fires, the more extreme the activity or the behavior, the more the brain fires. And so then you seek out that behavior and you take really serious risks in your life. And then you bring that back into your relationship. You can see the devastation that this thing can cause.
To go back to you, Emer Smith, and by the way, I'm speaking to Professor Emer Smith, research professor at the ESRI, and Dr. Richard Hogan, who is psychotherapist and author. The study in respect of access to pornography and in respect of education around pornography, did you look at all into how well prepared and how well educated pornographic users were in terms of what they were seeing?
We did have information on whether they received relationships and sexuality education at school. And we didn't see a relationship there because the vast majority had received this, but we didn't have information on the quality of that or the extent of it. But we had good information on the extent to which they talked to their parents about sex. And surprisingly, given that, their parents are kind of relatively young, nearly 4 in 10 hadn't spoken to their parents about sex before the age of 17. Certainly their impression is that they didn't have those discussions, or certainly they didn't feel they were having those discussions systematically. And many found it difficult to talk to their parents, especially young men talking to their fathers about sex. And so they were turning to the internet. They were turning to their friends for information about sex. And that was kind of feeding on to porn use. Yeah, I mean, it was really we were quite struck by those figures. We thought that, parent-child communication would be more open than that. But certainly there were issues, in particular fathers and rural fathers were more reluctant to engage with their sons around sexual discussion.
But as a total headline number, to discover that almost half of 17-year-olds have had no conversation about sexual behaviour with their parents by the time they get to 17.
If you ask the parents, they report it being more common. But certainly, it may not be that there were no conversations, but certainly young people, a very significant group of young people, are feeling that they haven't had significant engagement with their parents on these topics. And as I said, they're going to seek out other information, and it can be often misinformation. Because we also find that those who rely on their friends for information about sex are less likely to go on and use condoms when they have sex.
Did you find any correlation in terms of pornography consumption or use and the people who hadn't had conversations with their parents? In other words, those in a positive information, did they tend to go to porn?
No, it wasn't that direct, but it was definitely those who were getting information from the internet or their friends that were turning to porn later on.
Richard, can I go back to you on that? Because I would assume what you talked about, the level of damage that can be done by eroding the norms of somebody's intimacy by heavy use of pornography. I assume for a child to have made it to 17 and their main grounding to have been gossip from friends and access to internet pornography, that can be deeply unhealthy.
Unbelievably unhealthy, Antoine. And this is exactly what the issue is here. It is normal to have sexual curiosity, particularly in adolescence when you're trying to find out the self and understanding yourself. But here's the real problem, Anton, is what they're consuming, what they're satiating that normal curiosity, because we don't want to stigmatize it. It's normal curiosity to be sexually, explorative at that age. But what they're consuming, that is the issue, because pornography, and this is the message I'm trying to get to parents for so long, pornography today is not what pornography used to be. And so, it was very much, you see that in Friends, Joey and Chandler consuming pornography. It's all very normalized. But that's not what pornography is today. Pornography today is about restraint. It's about taking away consent. It's about BDSM. It's about, pain, and that's not what we want any child to consume. And that normative road towards sexual discovery, we don't want them consuming this stuff because it is damaging. And it absolutely erodes any sense of intimacy. It takes away, it presents them with ideas that girls are some sort of objects of desire, that they're unfeeling in some ways. And they don't understand, and that's the education, that this is a performative aspect. This is a performative thing. This is not reality. And this is not how people who love them, each other, this is not how people express that love.
Now, can I ask this advisedly and delicately, Richard, whatever about the negatives that you're outlining, is the reality that pornography, particularly internet pornography, is also now normal? If you look at those, the sort of the website rankings that I gave earlier on, the most popular pornographic site in the country is more popular than RTE, Amazon, Independent and Done Deal. That means it's a facet of an awful lot of people's lives.
It is, absolutely. And that's the problem here. It's become so normalized with the internet, and there's so little regulation around what our children in particular, whatever about adults, but what our children are consuming. And I've worked in schools where senior infants have consumed hardcore extreme material. We're living in an era
senior
here.
Senior infant.
Yeah. And I don't say that lightly to scare people, but that's the reality. The minute your child has a smartphone or an iPad or any device, they're going to consume pornography. It's not that they might consume it. It's that they are going to consume it. It's everywhere. It's embedded into everything. And then they're going to, you know, a story I'd see a lot is that an older cousin came over to the house and showed the 8-year-old some pornography. It's all over our society currently, and we have no regulation in place to protect our children. You know what really gets me, Anton, is that if I don't put a seatbelt on my child, I'll get fined for that. But if my child consumes hardcore extreme material, no one's at fault for that. There's no one to blame for that. There's no accountability for that. And that is not good enough.
Eimear, to go back to you, I know the ESRI is reluctant to get into the area of policy recommendations. But if there are areas from the research that you've done that throw up red flags for further consideration, what are they?
I think that there's two areas. I think we need to give parents support to have those conversations with their children, you know, and to help them engage critically with pornography. I mean, you know, it's out there. That ship has sailed. We need to give young people the skills through their parents, through conversations with their parents, through relationships and sexuality education at school, to be able to critically reflect on what they see if they do see it. And to be able to kind of say, well, you know, that is or isn't kind of normal sex, if you like, and to be able to do that. And the curriculum for sex education at school has just been revamped. And it does explicitly mention that, you know, older young people will be given that ability to critically reflect on sexual images. And I think that's really important. And it's important for digital literacy in general that they be able to reflect on other forms of misinformation online as well.
Well, on that point, when it comes to the future research that you're doing, because you described following this cohort from 17 through 20 through 25, pornography, like misinformation, is a broad church. So has the SRI any intention of looking further into the type of material that is being consumed and the relative harms of those types?
Well, it would be good to be able to do so. The Central Statistics Office is now doing the data collection for growing up in Ireland. So it would be their call, along with the call of Department of Children, Equality, Disability, Integration and Youth. But certainly it's something that would bear further work. There's also a planned national study of sexual behaviour among adults. And I think that could usefully explore pornography and regularity of use, but also the type of use. I think it's a very important to unpack what people are actually seeing or consuming.
Eimear, thank you very much for your time this morning. That's Professor Eimear Smith, who is research professor at the ESRI. Richard is still with us. Richard Hogan, psychotherapist and author. Can I go to just one final piece out of this, Richard? It is slightly tangential to the core of the research, but I think significant nonetheless. That figure that says that 4 out of 10, so nearly half of the people surveyed in this, so 20-year-olds, are making it to the age of 17. This is what they were asked in the survey. They're getting to the age of 17 without having had any conversation with their parents about sexual norms and sexual behaviours. And if I go to what Eimear said, she said that when you ask the parents, you get a slightly different number, as in the parents believe they have talked to their kids. The kids believe they haven't been talked to in a way that has had any effect. I would have thought that's a very stark figure in an era where we are meant to be much more liberal in communication in families, and where it has been drummed into us for decades that we're meant to be open with our kids.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I found that figure quite illuminating, maybe. And I suppose it wouldn't be representative of what I see in my clinic and with the parents that I speak to in my clinic. But again, Anton, it is the, you know, the old stigma around sex. We don't like to have the conversation about it as parents. I suppose we find that conversation a little bit awkward. we mustn't shy away from it. We have to have those conversations. I'm surprised that figure, to be honest. I think more modern parents are a bit more open about their sexuality and about their children's sexuality and about having conversations around that. So, yeah, I did find that figure, like yourself, a bit striking.
Richard, thank you. That's Dr. Richard Hogan, psychotherapist and author. If you want to get in touch, 53106 at a cost of 30 cent or 087 1400 106.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.